Hello everyone, so I decided to run for public office in at least 5 to 10 years, 30, be 35, in late 2028, so I'll be running for office in a few years. Maybe a little bit after that. By the time I'm 40, I'll be running for office or attempted to run for public office, and here's why. Many people are sick and tired of tame and timid politicians, user-friendly politicians, politically correct politicians, sanitized politicians, meek and mild, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week politicians, passive aggressive politicians, G-rated phoniness politicians, false kumbaya politicians, superficial harmony politicians, people-pleasing politicians, people-appeasing politicians, toxic positivity politicians, spiritual bypassing politicians, spiritualizing politicians, sugar and rainbows politicians, peaches and cream politicians, la la land politicians, fantasy land politicians, fairy tale land politicians, utopia politicians, everybody get along and sing a song politicians, everybody let's hold hands and dance politicians, sugar, spice, and everything nice politicians. Happy, happy, joy, joy politicians. And let's all be friends, even to the very end, politicians. People are also sick and tired of the soft around the edges, round the clock politicians. So I decided to be the politician that people need. It was not easy for me to accept this call. Autism families noticed my political astuteness. In layman's terms, he's common sense with politics. He Antonio servanthood minded when it comes to politics. Because sometimes I wasn't the biggest starter political conversations. I would get to know people and we would start talking about their home lives. And with autism moms, they talked a lot about their frustrations at home regarding issues of society impacting their home and their legislative needs. So they encouraged me to run for public office to benefit autism families and marginalized families in general. At first, I was petrified. And they could sense that, and they said, Antonio, politics won't be ugly when it comes to you. It'll be beautiful. It'll make people love politics all over again. And people will not be dismayed by politics when it comes to you because you actually do it 100% right. Most people in politics do not do politics 100% right. And they said that, run for us. And so I decided to accept the call. And I decided that I want to do U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. The reason why I don't want to be president is because I don't want to tell people to do legislation. I actually want to vote on legislation. I think Congress is more powerful than the White House because Congress ultimately can do what the president can't. The president can pitch the legislative ideas to voters in Congress, but at the end of the day, Congress decides what gets voted on, what doesn't, what legislation passes, and what legislation does not pass. So I decided I want to be in the House and the Senate. And what party would I be a part of? I would be a liberal, progressive, leftist Democrat. I'm independent. I'm an independent voter who is into leftist progressivism, liberalism, Democratic Party style democracy. That's me. So I'm very liberal and very progressive. I have Green Party mindsets, but I will never run third party because third party never wins. But I'm a Green Party libertarian type too. So I have all the mixture of these views, right? I love green politics. I do. I'm a Green New Deal type of person. So I'm into politics because of my nature and because of the unfathomable aspects of my childhood that y'all are privy to. I mean, organized crime is the biggest human rights abuse and human rights violations in the history of the whole world. There's nothing worse than organized crime, because organized crime includes children, not just adults. In the movies and television, you just see the adults. Every now and then you see kids, but there's way more kid activity in the crime world than what is let be known. And in the podcast, I talk about it. Let me get back to the public office thing. So I decided to run for office, not to be about Chiron, sound bites, clickbaits, screaming matches, vicious insults, and negative ads, even though I must admit, when you run for office, there are times where you have to tell the truth about your opponent, and at times you have to say unflattering things, not to destroy your opponent's humanity, but to say that your opponent is not favoring the least of these. So telling the truth can be unflattering to those who resist the truth. So there's a way to tell the truth without being tyrannical, without bashing the spirit of the person. And it's hard to do. Especially nowadays in 2024. Oh my. Woo! Enough said on that, right? But I'll say this. I decided to run for office also because people want to vote for somebody that talks just like them. This is not xenophobia. What I'm saying is, people don't keep it clean when they talk all the time. And people don't like it when you talk clean all the time. I don't either, because this life that we live, you can't always keep it clean. I'm not saying be immoral, but sometimes you gotta say, this shit is fucked up. Motherfuckers be on a damn bullshit. These assholes are driving me crazy. Sometimes you gotta say it. Or, these ass wipes are pissing me the fuck off. Sometimes you gotta say it. People need politicians to talk like that sometimes. So it's unrealistic for people to say, your politician can't cuss, but you do. So you're gonna hold your politician to standards that you don't even hold yourself. That is cruelty and barbarity to me. Because if you're gonna hold somebody to standards, you actually have to live them out your damn self. So, I'll say this. Will I be a foul-mouthed politician? Sometimes, yes. Not for shock value, not to offend the Parents Television Council, but I have to match the healthy intensity of the electorate. Which means I have to say what people feel. How I feel is how people feel. Because it's my job to represent them. There's no codependency, no enabling, no coddling. But people that have been traumatized by life, they need a politician who says what they're thinking out loud. So, for example, yes, I'm appropriate with my language everywhere I go. Nobody has to tell me that. But if I'm struggling to care for my children, sometimes parents let it fly, not at their children, but at life. So I decided I want to be a healthy politician, meaning I want to divide my time between Capitol Hill and disenfranchised communities. But I want to be safe because I understand that when you're in any powerful leadership, there's jealousy, there's envy, there's hateration, and I decided that those things won't consume me nor ruin my life because I'm really a champion of the people type of person. Many people say that. I'm really about that life. I want to spend more time with my constituents than on Capitol Hill. Because I can honestly say to them that, hey, this is what I've done when it comes to talking to Republicans about, hey, the biggest things on the agenda, the human rights agenda item is, and my constituents say this and that, you have to put everything they want and need in the bill. Everything they want and need is of reasonable rationality. So put this in the bill. Okay, you didn't put all that in this bill. Put the rest of what they want in the next bill, in the next bill, in the next bill, in the next bill, until they're 100% satisfied or close enough to it. And then still keep putting more and more upliftment for people like my constituents in the bill. Don't stop just because we're succeeding. We still have to keep doing the work. We still have to keep legislating for us, right? So that would be me. I want to vote on it because it's more powerful to vote on something than to talk about we need to vote on something. Because many people talk about it. Me, I can honestly say I did the work. I contributed to advancing this bill, this legislation. And plus, people need to see that you can survive abuse and be a servanthood, suffering servant politician. That yes, I have autism, but I'm a suffering servant, servanthood politician. I'm so good at being a politician, you don't even see me as a politician. You see me as a social servant. a public servant. In fact, even the word politician, you don't want to even apply it to me because I'm so good at politics. Like, man, that word, no. Just say he's a public servant. Yeah, he's a social servant. Just go with that. That's a much better fit. This politician makes it seem like he just want to maneuver people for his own gain. That ain't Antonio at all. So for me, I feel like also as a senator and congressman, you're not required to be married. And I like that freedom because I just want to help other people out. Don't get me wrong. I do healthy self-care. Some people call it healthy selfishness, but I do healthy self-care. So I don't burn out. I don't do sedentary lifestyle. I don't do workaholism. I have a healthy family work-life balance, and I have a work-life friend life balance that's healthy. I have a work-life hangout buddy, talk up buddy life that's balanced too. I have these things. So I feel like for me that I really wanted to take care of people and have people take care of me, you know, because I feel like in that world of politics, to be honest, that your constituents will look out for you when you look out for your constituents. Now, politics is not easy. Some people may be at odds with me, but it'll be the extremists. I don't think my constituents will, because with them, they'll see me busting my ass for them. And so they'll have a high respect for me, because how many people bust their asses for the needy? Not many. I'm one of the many that is. So, nobody can use my past against me. Nobody can use the traumas of my childhood against me. Nobody can use my sexual history against me. Nobody can use the sex surrogacy, porn, and sex life I have against me, because when you're a person that is unashamed of healing from not having the best past in quotations in the world, and that you're unashamed and guilt-free of being fully human, and you don't stigmatize the flesh, and that I don't live my life in paranoia because I have nothing to hide, and that you're a trustworthy person because I actually own up to what didn't go right in my life in terms of what I can control. And I've matured from that since then. And the stuff that's outside of my control, I still allowed myself to be a better person despite that. And when you don't pretend to be something you're not, and when you let your constituents in the world know, I'm me, but I'm just like you, it makes people want to protect you, because in their mind, here is truly a fully human being in whom there is no deceit. People look at me and go, Antonio is a person of truth. There is nothing false in Antonio whatsoever. And then they'll look at me and go, I can trust Antonio with my children. I can trust Antonio with my grandparents. I can trust Antonio with my parents. I can trust Antonio with my pets. I know that when I come back to the house, everybody is still happy. No abuse happened. No addiction happened. No verbal onslaughts happened. Nothing was stolen. Everything looks exactly the way it looks and exactly where it is. And nothing was misplaced. When you're the kind of person that lets it be known to people that, yes, I'm in politics, but I am the homely type. I'm the homie type. And you can still get appropriately close to me. I'm appropriately vulnerable to you. And I'm colorful just like you are. I have an edgy brain just like you. I don't always have it together just like you. I don't always feel good just like you. I'm not always in love with life just like you. Mental health work is not easy. It's not easy for you either. And I'm not uppity. You're not uppity. You can be a healthy politician and still drink alcohol in moderation. And I can still be a healthy politician and still party responsibly in moderation too. I can dance and love politics, you know? And I thought of the type of politician I want to be. I want to be the kind of politician where I'm well protected by the communities that I serve. It's understood when Antonio comes through, even people in the crime world will hold me in high regard. There are some people in the crime world that love that you take care of those on the bottom. That crime world, I'll talk about it a little bit, then I'll get back to what I'm talking about, is the most contradictory reality ever. People that break the law will love that you're law-abiding, but more importantly, heartfelt towards those who don't have it to give. Like, if you're truly heaven on earth to the have-nots, there are people in the crime world that will go, okay, Antonio coming through, even we will protect him. And that's it's unwordable because you're like, can y'all just be law-abiding so I can actually enjoy your protection? Because y'all version of protection, do you have to break the law just to do it? And then it's kind of like, I appreciate that y'all making sure me and my community is not under siege, but y'all got this miscreant mentality. It was like, no. So I would have to work that out with them. Like, hey, I would try to get them out of crime. Like, okay, you like to protect people. Great. Can you do that without selling drugs? Can you do that without always packing a gun? Can you be a legal gun owner, please and thank you? That would be me. So the in that world, there would be constituents that have high respect for me because I'm harmless. When you're harmless and you're truly there for the people, they will heckle the hecklers for you. They will troll the trolls for you. They will hate on the haters for you. They will detract the detractors for you. They will naysay the naysayers for you. That's why I would barely say anything. Because the constituents, they have access to video sharing media and social media. And if they figure out, oh, you're trying to bully Antonio, oh, it's on. We're going to out-bully the bully. We're not going to out-bully anybody else, but if you're trying to bully Antonio, we'll bully the bully before the bully bullies even more. I'm not advocating violence. I'm not advocating bullying. At the same time, I must admit, when you start insulting somebody and you get what you get, you can't complain about it. You can't even whine about it. That would have never happened if you would have shut the fuck up. So we got to think about when we start saying shit about people and people say what they say about us, we brought it on ourselves. When you go out there like that and people will slice and dice you, you know not to do that shit ever again. So the type of public figure that I am, I don't do cult of personality, y'all know that. But for me, I would weekly check in with my constituents and I would try to make sure that all the communities I serve, everybody's employed. I would constantly be talking to city leadership, state leadership, federal leadership to say, I want everybody I'm employed. I want everybody that I'm employed by because my constituents are my boss. They're my superiors. Equals, but superiors because without them, I don't have a job. And they're my supervisors. They're the ones I report to. I punch in the clock for them. They ultimately dictate my salary. And when I have my off days, I'm still working. I may not be in Capitol Hill that day, but I'm in my community, still interacting with families, and we hold each other accountable. We hold each other responsible. We keep each other from the liability issue because I don't have the ability to lie, right? So, type of politician I would be, I wouldn't try to be too cool with young people. Young people don't respect that. But at the same time, I would just be naturally cool with them. Like, I would really work with them on, you know, what's happening at home. Why are you feeling that way? What's going on? And I would work with leadership to get them the proper help. I would constantly go to I would constantly just, when it comes to the families, the town hall meetings and just committee meetings, community meetings. And you're probably wondering, what if you got some naysayer that comes through and tries to? Here's the thing, I disarm people. If they ask me questions about my episodes, like especially the stuff that people want to put in their ads that we talked about, like people using that stuff against me, I can answer honestly. It's not about encouraging kids to do anything. It's about growing up. This is what survivors need out of me. It'll be that. And my community would respect that in the world at large. They're like, you know, can't be upset with Tony about these things because, you know, I have a kinship and a connection with him. So I would be the type of person that my constituents would make sure I'm protected when I'm on Capitol Hill, when I travel throughout the country, outside the country. Sometimes you got to do an overseas trip and when you're a politician. And plus, I would be in homes every day. I would try to be in people's homes every day as best as possible. Even if it's in other communities, I feel like every day I should be in somebody's home. Not to take their food, not to take from them, but to give to them, to supply and provide and help guide them. Because I feel like without these homes, there's no home for me to go to. So there would be no corruption attached to me because I'm that honest of a person. If I fail, I'll tell you that I failed and I'll explain to you why I failed. Or if there's a trauma in my life that I'm still healing from, I'll tell you how I'm healing it and why I'm healing it. If I make a mistake or get corrected lovingly, I can show appropriate appreciation for that and sincerely evaluate it to the point where I blossom from it in my growth development as a person. And then I thought about what type of politician I wanted to be. So Antonio, as a politician, don't you have to go to churches and mosques and temples and synagogues and centers, monasteries, tabernacles, but you're unconventionally edgy. Do you think they won't vote for you? Here's my thing. Even though they're in houses of worship, they're still people. As long as I am meeting their legislative needs, and as long as I'm working with leadership to help fix the brokenness in my constituency community, I can just level with them and say, this is just me. I'm a person. I go through things. They wouldn't look at me as the boogeyman. They would go, Antonio, I feel a kinship with you too. They would vote for me because I wouldn't lie to them. At church, people will respect you by simply you being real about who you are and not trying to not try to double life people. When you're consistent, even church people like that about a person. And I can say, look, this is how I would tell church people when I run for office. I'm like, look, I did not have it good with religion all these years. And I would tell them, maybe I can start having it good in church with y'all. For years, I suffered from church homelessness. I was never at home in any church I've ever been in. Never felt 100%. And if they ask me about my views, I'm like, this is how life treated me. This is why I'm unconventional. This is why I don't fit in. This is why I don't blend in. This is why I'm non-traditional. This happened, that happened, this thing and the other thing. And I think even the church people would have a special respect. It would make them want to go, wow, I didn't know people with autism can go through this. Wow, I knew black people would go through this, but to be black on the spectrum, ooh, Jesus. We got to do more. We got to do this. We got to do that. So I would have respect faith-based people if they ask me, Antonio, what about your view on and God we trust on the dollar bill? And I would tell them, I don't mind Christianity being preached to people. I just feel like in God we trust should be on the dollar bills of believers. Like if you're a believer, in God we trust should be on the currency because of your faith. But I don't think it should be on the American currency of people who don't believe. And they might get a little confused. Possibly be like, look, I'd be like this. There should be a database. If you're faith-based and secular, then you can have the same dollar, but not in God we trust in terms of, okay, that's a secular person, so we don't put in God we trust on there. And then I'll tell them, okay, there should be a database of faith-based person. Oh, you're faith-based. We'll put in God in trust on your dollar bill. Yeah, the same dollar bill. The faith-based people get the in God we trust. And the secular people don't get the in God we trust, but y'all both have the same money. And I would say there should be a healthy compromise on that. And then when I talk, you know, the in God we trust, you know, on people's car tags, right? I would say for believers, that's okay, but that shouldn't be something that even non-believers have to have on their cars. So I would say that's a healthy middle ground. And if they ask me about, you've done podcasts saying not saying the best things about us, I wouldn't argue. I would say, I've been trying to experience Jesus in a church all my life, and I have not felt that. And I would say, hopefully that can change that I'm here. I still want that. I still need that. That's my child me saying these things, the child in me saying these things. And I would say, can you give me that right now? Before I leave here, can you give me what I'm in need of? Because I'm tired of not experiencing that. I want to experience it, so hungry and thirsty for that. That's how I would approach them. I say, will you promise to give me Jesus before I leave, before I head out? If you do, then I can change how I talk about church people. And that would be me. And then some people say, what about the church people, you know, adult films and you? And I would easily explain it to them. I would say, look, we live in a world where people are made to feel like they're sexual outcasts, sensual outcasts, erotic outcasts, because they don't fit the sensual nudity acceptability, the erotic nudity acceptability and sexual nudity acceptability in our world. And they've asked me, Antonio, you know what it's like to be us, so can you do this for us? And I would explain that, and I would tell them, it's not about glorification, fornication. That's not the goal. The goal is for people to have world peace inside themselves and each other in the form of honoring their own flesh and honoring the fleshes of others. And then I would tell the church people, I'm in no way stomping on your values. I would say human rights says let the church people keep their values and don't try to take their values away from them. And I tell them that's not what I'm doing. I would say, look, there are many rape survivors in the church world, and some would like to see unclothed verbal sexual empathy and unclothed nonverbal sexual empathy, because that's how they learn best. So I would tell the church people, hey, it has nothing to do with forcing you to be some sexual or not, but a lot of people have been made to feel like they have to be ensnared by the sexual devilishness in the form of erotic sensual predators, perpetrators, and sexual crooks that happened against them. So I would tell church people, this may be controversial in church, but I have to say, I'm like, there's a plurality of views on sex, sexuality in the church. And no one is saying you can't have the traditional view. In the human rights world, we let people have their traditional views and don't try to steal it from them. And we feel the same way about people who have non-traditional views. Let them have the non-traditional views. Don't try to steal away from them either. What I would tell them is, there are a lot of people in this world of church that some are married and they still don't know how to be erotically uninhibited and sensually uninhibited. So while I'm campaigning in house of worship, I would still tell them these things. Like, look, this is happening. And I would just say, you know, I would talk about each and every issue. Because, of course, some church people want to go there with you. Like, so, Tony, your thoughts on weed? I would go, well, So I must say that as a person who's been in church before, one of the last things that may ask me about is my views on weed. And I'll just say, well, I'm for the legalization of weed, but it doesn't mean that you have to partake in weed. Just because in the human rights world, I'm for everybody, that doesn't mean you have to do what you don't want to do. You don't have to sacrifice your beliefs. And you don't have to sacrifice your humanity either. So church people and just people of faith, I'm never combative. I'm not combative even with secular people. It's just not a part of my innate being to be such a way. But I'm going to tell you, what my job is. And it's very, very simple. My job as a future member of Congress is to protect people from objectification. Objectification is the act of treating a person as an object or a thing. It is my job to protect people from dehumanization, the act of disavowing the humanity of others. It is my job to protect people from sexual objectification, the act of treating a person as a mere object of sexual desire. It is my job to protect people from self-objectification, the objectification of oneself. It is my job to protect people from reification, the objectification of social relationships. It is my job to protect people from instrumentality, treating the person as a tool for another's purposes. It is my job to protect people from denial of autonomy, treating the person as lacking in autonomy or self-determination. It is my job to protect people from inertness, treating the person as lacking in agency or activity. It is my job to protect people from fungibility, treating the person as interchangeable with other objects. It is my job to protect people from violability, treating the person as lacking in boundary integrity and violable, as something that is permissible to break up, smash, break into. It is my job to protect people from ownership, treating the person as though they can be owned, bought, or sold, such as slavery. It is my job to protect people from denial of subjectivity, treating the person as though there is no need for a concern for their experiences or feelings. It is my job to protect people from reduction of body, the treatment of a person as identified with their body or body parts. It is my job to protect people from reduction to appearance, the treatment of a person primarily in terms of how they look and how they appear to the senses. It is my job to protect people from silencing, the treatment of a person as if they're silent, lacking the capacity to speak. It is my job to protect people from commodification, treating a person as a commodity or an object without regard to their personality or dignity. And because I protect people in all these ways, that means I'll be protected from objectification. I'll be protected from dehumanization. I'll be protected from sexual objectification. I'll be protected from self-objectification. I'll be protected from dehumanization. I really like that one. I'll be protected from self-objectification. I'll be protected from reification. I'll be protected from instrumentality. I'll be protected from denial of autonomy. I'll be protected from inertness. I'll be protected from fungibility. I'll be protected from violability. I'll be protected from commodification. I'll be protected from ownership. I'll be protected from denial of subjectivity. I'll be protected from reduction of body. I'll be protected from reduction of appearance. I'll be protected from silencing. And I'll be making I'll be a part. Here are my constitutional requirements. Making laws, raising revenue, authorizing, appropriating federal funds, and managing the federal debt. Providing for the common defense, providing for the general welfare. Regulating commerce among the states and with foreign nations. Establishing the federal court system and defining federal crimes. Declaring war, maintaining and regulating the military when, as a last resort, when we absolutely have no choice to. Directing a census every 10 years, impeaching federal officers that are corrupt, including the president if there's a corrupt one, House only. Trying impeachment, Senate only, if we have to. And advising and consenting to treaties and appointments of judges and federal officials, Senate only. So, my responsibilities are representation, legislation, investigation / oversight, management, politics, collaboration, leadership. So, I'm going to keep it simple and plain, and that's why people love that I can talk about complex issues in extremely easily understandable ways. Here we go. So, that means I have to understand the impact, proposed legislation, appropriations, nominations, and other congressional actions may have on my district / state. I must research and analyze all proposed congressional actions through the lens of the likely impact on my constituents. That means I understand constituency, demographics, trends, and needs. The research analysis, proactive outreach, and listening sessions, I can ensure that I broadly understand the characteristics and circumstances of those I represent. This responsibility of mine requires soliciting a wide range of views, data, ideas from a variety of my constituents and experts for me on how best to address the district / state needs of mine. That means I must educate and I inform constituents. I am responsible for helping my constituents understand how Congress and the rest of the government work and how federal, state, and local components interact. I must also explain important issues and legislation to my constituents and the possible impact of public policy in my communities, especially at the federal level. In addition, I have responsibility to explain how I'm advocating for my district / state. I must engage constituents in public policy. I am the face of the national public policy process for many of my constituents, and as such, I have responsibility to encourage my constituents to participate in civic activities and the discussion of public policy. I provide direct services to my constituents. I provide a range of services to my individual constituents, often my acting as an ombudsman to intercede with a government agency or private sector entity on my constituents' behalf to help resolve a problem, a practice known as casework in Congress. My casework may include my helping my constituents navigate federal program requirements, combat unfair practices, recover after natural disasters, or deal with an emergency. My common services include my responding to constituent inquiries and their emails, my writing letters of recommendation or commendation for my constituents, managing orders of American flags flown over the U.S. Capitol, my nominating constituents for U.S. military academies, and my scheduling tours of Washington, D.C. attractions. Still another type of my constituent services through special projects work, such as, you know, being a part of the helping local governments, businesses, and organizations learn of, understand, apply for, and obtain federal grants or contracts. Ooh, I have so much. Ooh, oh my. So, my next set of responsibilities are, I have to do legislation. That's the biggest one, actually. I establish legislative goals and priorities. I develop my ideas for public policy before I arrive on Capitol Hill, and I communicate those ideas of mine during my campaigns. However, I can't advance public policy proposals in every area of constituent need of mine and personal interest. So once I'm elected, I must establish my legislative priorities and I stay focused on them. I mature my public policy views and public policy proposals over time because my constituents grow, I grow, we just mature. I recognize the emerging legislative needs throughout the course of my work. I frequently learn of new issues that require public policy solutions. In addition to pursuing my established legislative priorities, I must stay attuned to emerging problems, trends, and needs in my constituencies and in society at large. And I balance pursuing my established goals against addressing the newly identified problems. I understand public policy issues. I cannot become experts on every public policy issue. That's why I'll be working with experts. But I must be as well informed as possible, as I am required to vote on all matters in my committees, my subcommittees, and on the chambers' floor. That's something I have to do. For me to do my best job possible, I must gather and analyze the best available information by, once again, I'll be consulting experts, and I make decisions that will provide the greatest good, the good and greater good for my constituents and for my country at large. I must take positions on legislation and public policy issues. Whether or not I offer legislation on a public policy issue through my votes, and I know that I will, I make policy choices on all provisions considered in my committee, subcommittees, and chamber. Additionally, I often must take public stances on high-profile issues, whether or not legislation is being considered. I've already proven that to you throughout the podcast. I develop and steward public policy through the legislative process. My translating my ideas into a feasible federal program or public policy is considered the core function of me as one of the legislators. I must design bills and amendments that are workable, affordable, and acceptable to my colleagues. The process requires me to not only understand the public policy issue, but I also must master the rules and protocols of my chamber and for me how to navigate leadership, colleagues, and coalitions and translate my ideas into law. I review the public policy impacts. My responsibility for public policy does not end once a bill becomes public law. I must also analyze its implementation. I assess the law's impact on my constituents and society, and I develop fixes when needed. Next, I have to do investigation/oversight. So I identify problems in the public and private sectors. I should be alert to problems identified through my constituent complaints, scandals, disasters, reports by experts or the media, routine oversight exercises, or other means. I may spot a wide range of issues, including such matters as poorly run federal programs, abusive practices by private businesses, defective taxes, technology problems, serious crimes, or unfair trade. It is often through the efforts of myself as a future member of Congress that problems in need of resolution are raised to the attention of committees, Congress, and of the committees I'm a part of and not a part of, Congress, and society as a whole, and bipartisan efforts that I'll be a part of are undertaken to address them. I establish investigation and oversight priorities. Just as I must determine my legislative priorities, so too I must establish my investigation and my oversight priorities, taking into consideration my interests, constituent needs, and available resources. My setting priorities helps ensure limited resources and staff are directed where very much needed. It also helps me determine which committees will best position us to advance our human rights objectives. I conduct research and oversight, both individually through my committees. I have significant authority research programs, gather facts, and analyze legal and policy issues. I can also obtain assistance from such bodies as the Congressional Research Service, CRS, Government Accountability Office, GAO, Federal Agency Inspector General, IGS, and the committee staff that I work with. Only committees and subcommittees can issue subpoenas to compel documents or testimony, but individual members like me in the future, I'll be requesting information and conduct limited oversight inquiries. So I ask questions at hearings. I carry out my investigative and oversight duties by attending hearings. The congressional hearings I'll be a part of in the future will often examine agency actions, private sector abuses, spending or tax issues, or matters related to presidential nominations. It is through these hearings that I, as a future member of Congress, can obtain information, establish facts, and I will hold public and private sector entities accountable. I, who will attend hearings in the future, I'll be responsible for asking the questions that facilitate fact-finding and accountability. If some of the members do not do their homework to understand the issues and ask informative, probing questions, myself, the healthy members of Congress, and the public will not get the information needed to understand and address the problems at hand. Next, I'll be doing management. I'll be recruiting, hiring, training, and retaining staff. Talented, experienced employees of the constituents, and my constituents and myself, are the most valuable assets in any knowledge-based workplace in Congress. For me, in this case, in the future, will be one of the most complex, information-rich, knowledge-based workplaces in the world. I will be solely responsible for identifying, recruiting the talent I need, ensuring that, they perform as effectively as possible for as long as possible. High turnover in any organization is a loss. I don't think that'll ever be my issue. But on Capitol Hill, every staffer of my constituency and myself will make sure that they don't leave and that they can keep their institutional knowledge with us and that they don't have to take significant time and effort to rebuild. That means I establish office priorities. My staffing and my management priorities will follow from the priorities I set in my other roles. I must hire staff and establish operations that support what I hope to accomplish during my tenure in Congress. I, whose priorities emphasize constituent service, I will need a very different staff and office structure than mine aiming for a particular committee chairmanship or to excel in oversight investigations. I will establish an organizational structure operations to accomplish the specified goals. I, in the future, like every other member of Congress, I will have a specific budget for my operations and I must decide how to allocate and manage it. Will I hire experienced staff with extensive policy expertise or less experienced policy generalists? Will I allocate more resources to my district/state offices, or will I spend more on communication outreach from Washington, D.C.? Will I rely primarily on a chief of staff, or will I routinely meet with multiple staffers? The structure I create must reflect and support my goals and my management style. My essential management tools include an office organizational chart and chain of command, personnel policies and policies for setting, delegating, overseeing my setting, my delegating, my overseeing projects and tasks. And the big part is the politics that I'll be doing. I'll be building relationships with party leadership. Even before I'm elected, me as a future congressional candidate, I will usually affiliate with a political party, the Democrats, or develop a relationship with party officials, the Democrat Party officials, and Democrat Party leaders to access Democrat Party resources and gain Democrat Party support with Democrat Party leadership. Once in Congress, for me, I must foster relationships with congressional leaders who can help me with committee assignments, my building support for my own priorities, and my fostering relationships with my colleagues. I must shape and I promote Democrat Party positions and Democrat Party priorities. So even though I'm a self-identified independent, I associate with one of the two major parties, the Democrats, and I'll help advance that Democrat Party's political agenda. I can use a variety of means to do so, including my voting for the Democrat Party's leaders at the start of a new Congress, my helping in shape and advocate for Democrat Party positions and Democrat Party priorities, my participating in Democrat Party retreats and other activities, and my voting with the Democratic Party on key legislation or nominations. I help maintain or regain majority status in Congress. When a party is in the minority in Congress, it encounters much more difficulty in advancing its positions and agenda. So my, as a future member being affiliated with the Democrat Party, I'll be responsible for helping to build Democrat Party support and Democrat Party infrastructure that maintains or regains its majority status. My activities include ensuring my own re-election, my helping raising funds, and my building support for other candidates within the Democrat Party, and my scouting for and encouraging promising candidates. I'll be building bipartisan relationships. Politics is the art of the possible, and in the House and Senate, I usually need bipartisan support to achieve my objectives. For that reason, I'll be building relationships with other members on the other side of the aisle, especially future members from the same state. I'll also co-sponsor bipartisan legislation. I'll conduct bipartisan oversight, and I seek to develop a reputation for reaching across political divides. There's so much work I gotta keep doing, but I'll be doing collaboration. I'll build trust among my constituents, my staff, my colleagues, and my stakeholders. Trust is the foundation of relationships for me, and my relationships are the primary means for me to advance my professional goals. My building trust requires, among other characteristics, my providing reliable information and my keeping commitments. I generate support for policies, goals, and legislations. My developing public policy is a long process that for me typically involves the engagement of many individuals and groups along the way. I must identify and build rapport with key stakeholders, I must enlist their support on specific projects, and I work with them to craft and promote public policy proposals and legislation. That means I organize and manage coalitions. My achieving policy outcomes for me typically requires a sustained effort and base of support, usually through my coalitions. My coalitions are my alliances that come together around a particular issue or action. For me, they can take many forms, including groups of my constituents or trade associations, academic or organization leaders, agency professionals, co-sponsors, legislation, or members of committee or legislative caucus. So I can't say that I will have no work to do. I can say, wow, my homework is every day. And the weekends, I still have homework to do. To keep my coalitions together, I must effectively keep them engaged, and I have to manage their expectations, level of efforts, and their ongoing actions. I have to negotiate with those who disagree. My collaboration is not only about working with my fellow supporters, but also about my negotiating with those with different or opposing views. One of the most important skills I can have is the ability of mine to work with naysayers, and I convince them to go quiet or become backstage or even be open supporters. Sometimes for me, it may be difficult for me as a future member to accomplish any goals in Congress without being able to work with those who disagree. So, okay, I'm so glad I'm almost finished. I have to do leadership. I uphold the Constitution. At my swearing in, I take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. My carrying out the responsibility requires an extensive understanding of the Constitution, and my role in Congress in helping to maintain separation of powers and checks and balances among the branches of government. I am one of the stewards of our democracy, and my leadership requires understanding upholding, for me, Congress's keystone role in it. I establish leadership priorities. As with all of my roles, I must set priorities to maximize their effectiveness. My attempting to demonstrate leadership on multiple issues risks failing to demonstrate true leadership on any one issue. In choosing my leadership priorities, I seek to assert community leadership among my constituents. I focus on becoming a national policy expert on a specific issue or within a particular committee, or my leading advocate for a specific group or cause. It's important for me to decide proactively and for me to move strategically in a chosen direction. I inspire others. Whether or not I view myself as such, I am widely viewed as a national leader. Now I'll be looked to for guidance and inspiration by my constituents, my staff, and others around the country. I must be mindful that even if I do not see myself as inspirational, and indeed I do, I will be seen that way by others. My actions, my words, and my demeanor, positive or negative, will be subject to public scrutiny and can have a much broader impact than intended. Now you understand more of why I am bluntly honest with you about what I truly think. I serve as a model for U.S. democracy, culture, values, and conduct in many respects. All elected officials, including me in the future, will be the embodiments of American society. My leadership and my conduct will be viewed throughout my constituencies, my country, and the world as representative of, like me, for example, the people of the United States. I need to serve in an ethically and historically responsible manner. This, for me, requires understanding of the responsibilities, processes, and norms of the presidents of the Senate and House of Representatives, and I'll be a part of both, as well as a sense of current democratic sentiment in the country. So, yes, these are the things I'm called to do. So, for me, I acknowledge that as a member of Congress, which I'll be in the future, that means I'll have to go on cable news media sometimes, and that I have to speak up for my constituents in these cable news media. media time slots that they'll make available for me. And I can also say that out being house worship sometimes is a part of the job, because some of my constituents will be faith-based persons. But overall, I'll be, you know, as I currently am, you know, I'm unchurched, I'm non-church, I'm de-churched. And I'll also say that I don't limit myself to a singular religion to practice. So I'm unaffiliated with religion. But I affiliate myself with the universal Christ consciousness. Christ-likeness, you know, even though I don't practice any religion. Last thing I'll say is, is that there will never be any private scandals nor public scandals in reference to me, yours truly.